for many men can exercise virtue in their own affairs, but not in their relations to their neighbour. This is why the saying of Bias is thought to be true, that rule will show the man. For a ruler is necessarily in relation to other men and a member of society. For this same reason, justice, alone of the virtues, is thought to be another's good, because it is related to our neighbour. For it does what is advantageous to another, either a ruler or a co-partner. Now the worst man is he who exercises his wickedness both towards himself and towards his friends, and the best man is not he who exercises his virtue towards himself, but he who exercises it towards another. For this is a difficult task. Justice, in this sense, then, is not part of virtue, but virtue entire. Nor is the contrary injustice a part of vice, but vice entire. What the difference is between virtue and justice in this sense is plain from what we have said. They are the same, but their essence is not the same. What, as a relation to one's neighbour, is justice is, as a certain kind of state without qualification, virtue. 2. But at all events, what we are investigating is the justice which is a part of virtue, for there is a justice of this kind, as we maintain. Similarly, it is with injustice in the particular sense that we are concerned. That there is such a thing is indicated by the fact that while the man who exhibits in action the other forms of wickedness acts wrongly indeed, but not graspingly, e.g. the man who throws away his shield through cowardice, or speaks harshly through bad temper, or fails to help a friend with money through meanness, when a man acts graspingly, he often exhibits none of these vices, no, nor altogether, but certainly wickedness of some kind, for we blame him, and injustice. There is, then, another kind of injustice which is a part of injustice in the wide sense, and a use of the word unjust, which answers to a part of what is unjust in the wide sense of contrary to the law. Again, if one man commits adultery for the sake of gain and makes money by it, while another does so at the bidding of appetite, though he loses money and is penalized for it, the latter would be held to be self-indulgent rather than grasping, but the former is unjust, but not self-indulgent. Evidently, therefore, he is unjust by reason of his making gain by his act. Again, all other unjust acts are ascribed invariably to some particular kind of wickedness, e.g. adultery to self-indulgence, the desertion of a comrade in battle to cowardice, physical violence to anger. But if a man makes gain, his action is ascribed to no form of wickedness, but injustice. Evidently, therefore, there is, apart from injustice, in the wide sense another, particular injustice, which shares the name and nature of the first, because its definition falls within the same genus. For the significance of both consists in a relation to one's neighbour, but the one is concerned with honour or money or safety or that which includes all these, if we had a single name for it, and its motive is the pleasure that arises from gain, while the other is concerned with all the objects with which the good man is concerned. It is clear, then, that there is more than one kind of justice, and that there is one which is distinct from virtue entire. We must try to grasp its genus and differentia. The unjust has been divided into the unlawful and the unfair, and the just into the lawful and the fair. To the unlawful answers the aforementioned sense of injustice, But since unfair and the unlawful are not the same, but are different as a part is from its whole, for all that is unfair is unlawful, but not all that is unlawful is unfair. The unjust and injustice in the sense of the unfair are not the same as, but different from the former kind, as part from whole. For injustice in this sense is a part of injustice in the wide sense, and similarly, justice in the one sense of justice in the other. Therefore, we must speak also about particular justice, and particularly and similarly, about the just and the unjust. The justice, then, which answers to the whole of virtue, and the corresponding injustice, one being the exercise of virtue as a whole, and the other, that of vice as a whole, towards one's neighbour, we may leave on one side. And how the meanings of just and unjust, which answer to these are to be distinguished, is evident. For practically the majority of the acts commanded by the law are those which are prescribed from the point of view of virtue taken as a whole. For the law bids us practice every virtue, and forbids us to practice any vice. And the things that tend to produce virtue taken as a whole are those of the acts prescribed by the law which have been prescribed with a view to education for the common good. But with regard to the education of the individual as such, which makes him without qualification a good man, we must determine later whether this is the function of the political art or of another. For perhaps it is not the same to be a good man and a good citizen of any state, taken at random. Of particular justice, and that which is just in the corresponding sense, a one kind, is that which is manifested in distributions of honour or money or the other things that fall to be divided among those who have a share in the constitution, for in these it is possible for one man to have a share either unequal or equal to that of another, and b, one is that which plays a rectifying part in transactions between man and man. Of this there are two divisions of transactions. One, some are voluntary, and two, others involuntary. Voluntary, such transactions as sale, purchase, loan for consumption, pledging, loan for use, depositing, letting, they are called voluntary because the origin of these transactions is voluntary, while of the involuntary, a, some are clandestine, such as theft, adultery, poisoning, procuring, enticement of slaves, assassination, false witness, and b, others are violent, such as assault, imprisonment, murder, robbery with violence, mutilation, abuse, insult. 3. A. We have shown that both the unjust man and the unjust act are unfair or unequal. Now it is clear that there is also an intermediate between the two unequals involved in either case, and this is the equal. For in any kind of action in which there's a more and a less, there is also what is equal. If, then, the unjust is unequal, just is equal, as all men suppose it to be, even apart from argument. And since the equal is intermediate, the just will be an intermediate. Now, equality implies at least two things. The just, then, must be both intermediate and equal and relative, i.e. for certain persons, and since the equal intermediate, it must be between certain things, which are respectively greater and less. Equal, it involves two things. Qua just, it is for certain people. The just, therefore, involves at least four terms, for the persons for whom it is in fact just are two, and the things in which it is manifested, the objects distributed, are two. And the same equality will exist between the persons and between the things concerned. For as the latter the things concerned are related, so are the former. If they are not equal, they will not have what is equal. But this is the origin of quarrels and complaints when either equals have, and are awarded, unequal shares, or unequals, equal shares. Further, this is plain from the fact that awards should be according to merit. For all men agree that what is just in distribution must be according to merit in some sense, though they do not all specify the same sort of merit. But Democrats identify it with the status of freemen, supporters of oligarchy with wealth, or with noble birth, and supporters of aristocracy with excellence. The just, then, is a species of the proportionate. Proportion, being not a property only of the kind of number which consists of abstract units, but of number in general. For proportion is equality of ratios, and involves four terms at least. That discrete proportion involves four terms is plain, but so does continuous proportion, for it uses one term as two and mentions it twice, e.g., as the line A is to the line B, so is the line B to the line C. The line B, then, has been mentioned twice. So that if the line B be assumed twice, the proportional terms will be four. And the just, too, involves at least four terms, and the ratio between one pair is the same as that between the other pair, for there is a similar distinction between the persons and between the things. As the term A, then, is to B, so will C be to D. And therefore, alternando, as A is to C, B will be to D. Therefore, also the whole is in the same ratio to the whole. And this coupling the distribution effects, and, if the terms are so combined, effects justly. The conjunction, then, of the term A with C, and of B with D, is what is just in distribution. And this species of the just is intermediate. And the unjust is what violates the proportion. For the proportional is intermediate, and the just is proportional. Mathematicians call this kind of proportion geometrical, for it is in geometrical proportion that it follows that the whole is to the whole as either part is to the corresponding part. This proportion is not continuous, for we cannot get a single term standing for a person and a thing. This, then, is what the just is, the proportional. The unjust is what violates the proportion, hence one term becomes too great, the other too small, as indeed happens in practice, for the man who acts unjustly has too much, and the man who is unjustly treated too little of what is good. In the case of evil, the reverse is true. For the lesser evil is reckoned a good in comparison with the greater evil, since the lesser evil is rather to be chosen than the greater. And what is worthy of choice is good, and what is worthier of choice, a greater good. This, then, is one species of the just. 4b. The remaining one is the rectificatory, which arises in connection with transactions both voluntary and involuntary. This form of the just has a different specific character from the former. For the justice which distributes common possessions is always in accordance with the kind of proportion mentioned above, For in the case also in which the distribution is made from the common funds of a partnership, it will be according to the same ratio which the funds put into the business by the partners bear to one another. And the injustice opposed to this kind of justice is that which violates the proportion. But the justice in transactions between man and man is a sort of equality indeed, and the injustice a sort of inequality, not according to that kind of proportion, however, but according to arithmetical proportion. For it makes no difference whether a good man has defrauded a bad man or a bad man a good one, nor whether it is a good or a bad man that has committed adultery. The law looks only to the distinctive character of the injury, and treats the parties as equal. If one is in the wrong, and the other is being wronged, and if one inflicted injury and the other has received it, therefore, this kind of injustice, being an inequality, the judge tries to equalize it. For in the case also in which one has received and the other has inflicted a wound, or one has slain and the other been slain, the suffering and the action have been unequally distributed. But the judge tries to equalize by means of the penalty, taking away from the gain of the assailant. For the term gain is applied generally to such cases, even if it be not a term appropriate to certain cases, e.g. to the person who inflicts a wound and loss to the sufferer. At all events, when the suffering has been estimated, the one is called loss and the other gain. Therefore the equal is intermediate between the greater and the less. But the gain and the loss are respectively greater and less in contrary ways. More of the good and less of the evil are gain, and the contrary is loss. Intermediate between them is, as we saw, equal, which we say is just. Therefore, corrective justice will be the intermediate between loss and gain. This is why, when people dispute, they take refuge in the judge, and to go to the judge is to go to justice. For the nature of the judge is to be a sort of animate justice. And they seek the judge as an intermediate, and in some states they call judges mediators, on the assumption that if they get what is intermediate, they will get what is just. The just, then, is an intermediate, since the judge is so. Now the judge restores equality. It is as though there were a line divided into unequal parts, and he took away that by which the greater segment exceeds the half, and added it to the smaller segment. And then the whole has been equally divided. Then they say they have their own, i.e., when they have got what is equal. The equal is intermediate between the greater and the lesser line according to arithmetical proportion. It is for this reason also that it is called just, sikaion, because it is a division into two equal parts, sikha. Just as if one were to call it sikaion, and the judge, sikastes, is one who bisects, sikastes. For when something is subtracted from one of two equals and added to the other is in excess by these two, since if what was taken from the one had not been added to the latter would have been in excess by one only. It therefore exceeds the intermediate by one, and the intermediate exceeds by one that from which something was taken. By this, then, we shall recognize both what we must subtract from that which has more, and what we must add to that which has less. We must add to the latter that by which the intermediate exceeds it, and subtract from the greatest that by which it exceeds the intermediate. Let the lines AA, BB, CC be equal to one another? From the line AA, let the segment AE have been subtracted, and to the line CC, let the segment CD have been added, so that the whole line DCC exceeds the line EA by the segment CD and the segment CF. Therefore, it exceeds the line BB by the segment CD. These names, both loss and gain, have come from voluntary exchange. For to have more than one's own is called gaining, and to have less than one's original share is called losing, e.g. in buying and selling, and in all other matters in which the law has left people free to make their own terms. But when they get neither more nor less, but just what belongs to themselves, they say that they have their own, and that they neither lose nor gain. Therefore the just is intermediate between a sort of gain and a sort of loss, viz., those which are involuntary. It consists in having an equal amount before and after the transaction. 5. Some think that reciprocity is without qualification just. As the Pythagoreans said, for they defined justice without qualification as reciprocity. Now, reciprocity fits neither distributive nor rectificatory justice, yet people want even the justice of Rhadamanthus to mean this. Should a man suffer what he did, right justice would be done. For in many cases reciprocity and rectificatory justice are not in accord, e.g., first, if an official has inflicted a wound, he should not be wounded in return, and if someone has wounded an official, he ought not to be wounded only, but punished in addition. Further, second, there is a great difference between a voluntary and an involuntary act. But in associations for exchange, this sort of justice does hold men together, reciprocity in accordance with a proportion, and not on the basis of precisely equal return. For it is by proportionate requital that the city holds together. Men seek to return either evil for evil, and if they cannot do so, think their position mere slavery, or good for good, and if they cannot do so, there is no exchange. But it is by exchange that they hold together. This is why they give a prominent place to the Temple of the Graces, to promote the requital of services. For this is characteristic of grace. We should serve in return one who has shown grace to us, and should another time take the initiative in showing it. Now proportionate return is secured by cross-conjunction. Let A be a builder, B a shoemaker, C a house, D a shoe. The builder, then, must get from the shoemaker the latter's work, and must himself give him in return his own. If, then, first there is proportionate equality of goods, and then reciprocal action takes place, the result we mention will be effected. If not, the bargain is not equal, and does not hold. For there is nothing to prevent the work of the one being better than that of the other. They must therefore be equated. And this is true of the other arts also, for they would have been destroyed if what the patient suffered had not been just what the agent did, and of the same amount and kind. For it is not two doctors that associate for exchange, but a doctor and a farmer, or in general, people who are different and unequal. But these must be equated. This is why all things that are exchanged must be somehow comparable. It is for this end that money has been introduced, and it becomes, in a sense, an intermediate, for it measures all things. and therefore the excess and the defect, how many shoes are equal to a house, or to a given amount of food. The number of shoes exchanged for a house, or for a given amount of food, must therefore correspond to the ratio of builder to shoemaker. For if this be not so, there will be no exchange and no intercourse. And this proportion will not be affected unless the goods are somehow equal. All goods must therefore be measured by some one thing, as we said before. Now, this unit is in truth demand, which holds all things together. For if men did not need one another's goods at all, or did not need them equally, there would be either no exchange or not the same exchange. But money has become by convention a sort of representative of demand. And this is why it has the name money, nomisma, because it exists not by nature, but by law, nomos, and it is in our power to change it and make it useless. There will, then, be reciprocity when the terms have been equated, so that as farmer is to shoemaker, the amount of the shoemaker's work is to that of the farmer's work for which it exchanges. But we must not bring them into a figure of proportion when they have already exchanged, otherwise one extreme will have both excesses. But when they still have their own goods. Thus, they are equals and associates just because this equality can be effected in their case. Let A be a farmer, C food, B a shoemaker, D his product equated to C. If it had not been possible for reciprocity to be thus effected, there would have been no association of the parties. That demand holds things together as a single unit is shown by the fact that when men do not need one another, i.e., when neither needs the other, or one does not need the other, they do not exchange, as we do when someone wants what one has oneself, e.g., when people permit the exportation of corn in exchange for wine. This equation, therefore, must be established. And for the future exchange, that if we do not need a thing now, we shall have it if ever we do need it, money is, as it were, our surety. For it must be possible for us to get what we want by bringing the money. Now the same thing happens to money itself as to goods. It is not always worth the same, yet it tends to be steadier. This is why all goods must have a price set on them, for then there will always be exchange, and if so, association of man with man. Money, then, acting as a measure, makes goods commensurate and equates them. For neither would there have been association if there were not exchange, nor exchange if there were not equality, nor equality if there were not commensurability. Now, in truth, it is impossible that things differing so much should become commensurate. But with reference to demand, they may become so sufficiently. There must, then, be a unit, and that fixed by agreement, for which reason it is called money, for it is this that makes all things commensurate, since all things are measured by money. Let A be a house, B 10 minae, C a bed. A is half of B, if the house is worth 5 minae, or equal to them, the bed, C, is a tenth of B. It is plain, then, how many beds are equal to a house, viz. 5. That exchange took place thus before there was money is plain, for it makes no difference whether it is 5 beds that exchange for a house, or the money value of 5 beds. We have now defined the unjust and the just, these having been marked off from each other. it is plain that just action is intermediate between acting unjustly and being unjustly treated. For the one is to have too much, and the other to have too little. Justice is a kind of mean, but not in the same way as the other virtues, but because it relates to an intermediate amount, while injustice relates to the extremes. And justice is that in virtue of which the just man is said to be a doer by choice of that which is just, and one who will distribute either between himself and another, or between two others, not so as to give more of what is desirable to himself and less to his neighbour, and conversely with what is harmful, but so as to give what is equal in accordance with proportion. And similarly, in distributing between two other persons. Injustice, on the other hand, is similarly related to the unjust, which is excess and defect, contrary to proportion of the useful or hurtful. For which reason, injustice is excess and defect, viz., because it is productive of excess and defect, in one's own case excess of what is in its own nature useful, and defect of what is hurtful. While in the case of others, it is as a whole like what it is in one's own case. But proportion may be violated in either direction. In the unjust act, to have too little is to be unjustly treated. To have too much is to act unjustly. Let this be taken as our account of the nature of justice and injustice, and similarly, of the just and the unjust in general. 6. Since acting unjustly does not necessarily imply being unjust, we must ask what sort of unjust acts imply that the doer is unjust with respect to each type of injustice, e.g. a thief, an adulterer, or a brigand. Surely the answer does not turn on the difference between these types. For a man might even lie with a woman, knowing who she was, but the origin of his might be not deliberate choice, but passion. He acts unjustly, then, but is not unjust. E.g., a man is not a thief, yet he stole, nor an adulterer, yet he committed adultery. And similarly, in all other cases. Now we have previously stated how the reciprocal is related to the just, but we must not forget that what we are looking for is not only what is just without qualification, but also political justice. This is found among men who share their life with a view to self-sufficiency, men who are free and either proportionately or arithmetically equal, so that between those who do not fulfill this condition there is no political justice, but justice in a special sense and by analogy. For justice exists only between men whose mutual relations are governed by law, and law exists for men between whom there is injustice. For legal justice is the discrimination of the just and the unjust. And between men between whom there is injustice, there is also unjust action, though there is not injustice between all between whom there is unjust action. And this is assigning too much to oneself of things good in themselves and too little of things evil in themselves. This is why we do not allow a man to rule, but rational principle. Because a man behaves thus in his own interests and becomes a tyrant. The magistrate, on the other hand, is the guardian of justice, and if of justice, then of equality also. And since he is assumed to have no more than his share, if he is just, for he does not assign to himself more of what is good in itself unless such a share is proportional to his merits, so that it is for others that he labours, and it is for this reason that men, as we stated previously, say that justice is another's good. Therefore, a reward must be given him, and this is honour and privilege. But those for whom such things are not enough become tyrants. The justice of a master and that of a father are not the same as the justice of citizens, though they are like it. For there can be no injustice in the unqualified sense towards things that are one's own, but a man's chattel and his child, until it reaches a certain age and sets up for itself, are, as it were, part of himself, and no one chooses to hurt himself, for which reason there can be no injustice towards oneself. Therefore, the justice or injustice of citizens is not manifested in these relations, for it was, as we saw, according to law, and between people naturally subject to law. And these, as we saw, are people who have an equal share in ruling and being ruled. Hence justice can more truly be manifested towards a wife than towards children and chattels, for the former is household justice. But even this is different from political justice. 7. Of political justice, part is natural, part legal. Natural, that which everywhere has the same force, and does not exist by people's thinking this or that. Legal, that which is originally indifferent, but when it has been laid down is not indifferent, e.g. that a prisoner's ransom shall be a minor, or that a goat and not two sheep shall be sacrificed. And again, all the laws that are passed for particular cases, e.g. that sacrifice shall be made in honour of Brasidas, and the provisions of decrees. Now some think that all justice is of this sort, because that which is by nature is unchangeable, and has everywhere the same force, as fire burns both here and in Persia, while they see change in the things recognized as just. This, however, is not true in this unqualified way, but is true in a sense, or rather, with the gods, it is perhaps not true at all, while with us, there is something that is just even by nature, yet all of it is changeable, but still some is by nature, some not by nature. It is evident which sort of thing among things capable of being otherwise is by nature, and which is not, but is legal and conventional, assuming that both are equally changeable. And in all other things, the same distinction will apply. By nature the right hand is stronger, yet it is possible that all men should come to be ambidextrous. The things which are just by virtue of convention and expediency are like measures, for wine and corn measures are not everywhere equal, but larger in wholesale and smaller in retail markets. Similarly, the things which are just not by nature but by human enactment are not everywhere the same, since constitutions also are not the same, though there is but one which is everywhere by nature the best. Of things just and lawful, each is related as the universal to its particulars. For the things that are done are many, but of them each is one, since it is universal. There is a difference between the act of injustice and what is unjust, and between the act of justice and what is just. For a thing is unjust by nature or by enactment, and this very thing, when it has been done, is an act of injustice. But before it is done, is not yet that but is unjust. So too, with an act of justice, though the general term is rather just action and act of justice is applied to the correction of the act of injustice. Each of these must later be examined separately with regard to the nature and number of its species and the nature of the things with which it is concerned. 8. Acts just and unjust, being as we have described them, a man acts unjustly or justly whenever he does such acts voluntarily. When involuntarily, he acts neither unjustly nor justly, except in an incidental way. For he does things which happen to be just or unjust. Whether an act is or is not one of injustice or of justice is determined by its voluntariness or involuntariness. For when it is voluntary, it is blamed, and at the same time is then an act of injustice, so that there will be things that are unjust, but not yet acts of injustice, if voluntariness be not present as well. By the voluntary, I mean, as has been said before, any of the things in a man's own power which he does with knowledge, i.e., not in ignorance either of the person acted on, or of the instrument used, or of the end that will be attained, e.g., whom he is striking, with what, and to what end. Each such act being done not incidentally, nor under compulsion, e.g., if A takes B's hand and therewith strikes C, B does not act voluntarily, for the act was not in his own power. The person struck may be the striker's father, and the striker may know that it is a man or one of the persons present, but not know that it is his father. A similar distinction may be made in the case of the end, and with regard to the whole action. Therefore, that which is done in ignorance, or though not done in ignorance, is not in the agent's power, or is done under compulsion, is involuntary. For many natural processes, even we knowingly both perform and experience, none of which is either voluntary or involuntary, e.g., growing old or dying. But in the case of unjust and just acts alike, the injustice or justice may be only incidental. For a man might return a deposit unwillingly and from fear, and then he must not be said either to do what is just or to act justly except in an incidental way. Similarly, the man who under compulsion and unwillingly fails to return the deposit must be said to act unjustly, and to do what is unjust, only incidentally. Of voluntary acts, we do some by choice, others not by choice. By choice, those which we do after deliberation, not by choice, those which we do without previous deliberation. Thus, there are three kinds of injury in transactions between man and man. Those done in ignorance are mistakes when the person acted on, the act, the instrument, or the end that will be attained is other than the agent supposed. The agent thought either that he was not hitting anyone, or that he was not hitting with this missile, or not hitting this person, or to this end, but a result followed other than that which he thought likely. E.g., he threw not with intent to wound, but only to prick. Or the person hit, or the missile was other than he supposed. Now when, first, the injury takes place contrary to reasonable expectation, it is a misadventure. When, second, it is not contrary to reasonable expectation, but does not imply vice, it is a mistake. For a man makes a mistake when the fault originates in him, but is the victim of accident when the origin lies outside him. When, third, he acts with knowledge, but not after deliberation, it is an act of injustice, e.g. the acts due to anger, or to other passions necessary or natural to man. For when men do such harmful and mistaken acts, they act unjustly. And the acts are acts of injustice, but this does not imply that the doers are unjust or wicked, for the injury is not due to vice. But when, fourthly, a man acts from choice, he is an unjust man and a vicious man. Hence acts proceeding from anger are rightly judged not to be done of malice aforethought. For it is not the man who acts in anger, but he who enraged him that starts the mischief. Again, the matter in dispute is not whether the thing happened or not, but its justice. For it is apparent injustice that occasions rage. For they do not dispute about the occurrence of the act, as in commercial transactions, where one of the two parties must be vicious unless they do so owing to forgetfulness, but agreeing about the fact, they dispute on which side justice lies, whereas a man who has deliberately injured another cannot help knowing that he has done so, so that the one thinks he is being treated unjustly, and the other disagrees. But if a man harms another by choice, he acts unjustly. And these are the acts of injustice which imply that the doer is an unjust man, provided that the act violates proportion or equality. Similarly, a man is just when he acts justly by choice, but he acts justly if he merely acts voluntarily. Of involuntary acts, some are excusable, others not. For the mistakes which men make not only in ignorance but also from ignorance are excusable, while those which men do not from ignorance, but, though they do them in ignorance, owing to a passion, which is neither natural nor such as man is liable to, are not excusable. 9. Assuming that we have sufficiently defined the suffering and doing of injustice, it may be asked, first, whether the truth is expressed in Euripides' paradoxical words, "I slew my mother, that's my tale in brief." Were you both willing, or unwilling both? Is it truly possible to be willingly treated unjustly? Or is all suffering of injustice the contrary, involuntary, as all unjust action is voluntary? And is all suffering of injustice of the latter kind, or else all of the former? Or is it sometimes voluntary, sometimes involuntary? So, too, with the case of being justly treated. All just action is voluntary, so that it is reasonable that there should be a similar opposition in either case, that both being unjustly and being justly treated should be either alike voluntary or alike involuntary. But it would be thought paradoxical, even in the case of being justly treated, if it were always voluntary, for some are unwillingly treated justly. Second, one might raise this question also, whether everyone who has suffered what is unjust is being unjustly treated, or, on the other hand, it is with suffering as with acting. In action and in passivity alike, it is possible to partake of justice incidentally, and similarly it is plain, of injustice. For to do what is unjust is not the same as to act unjustly, nor to suffer what is unjust as to be treated unjustly, and similarly, in the case of acting justly and being justly treated. For it is impossible to be unjustly treated if the other does not act unjustly, or justly treated unless he acts justly. Now, if to act unjustly is simply to harm someone voluntarily, and voluntarily means knowing the person acted on, the instrument and the manner of one's acting, and the incontinent man voluntarily harms himself, not only will he voluntarily be unjustly treated, but it will be possible to treat oneself unjustly. This also is one of the questions in doubt, whether a man can treat himself unjustly. Again, a man may voluntarily, owing to incontinence, be harmed by another who acts voluntarily, so that it would be possible to be voluntarily treated unjustly. Or is our definition incorrect? Must we, to harming another with knowledge, both of the person acted on, of the instrument, and of the manner, add, contrary to the wish of the person acted on? Then A man may be voluntarily harmed and voluntarily suffer what is unjust, but no one is voluntarily treated unjustly, for no one wishes to be unjustly treated, not even the incontinent man. He acts contrary to his wish. For no one wishes for what he does not think to be good, but the incontinent man does do things that he does not think he ought to do. Again, one who gives what is his own, as Homer says Glaucus gave Diomede. Armour of gold for brazen. The price of 100 beeves for 9 is not unjustly treated, for though to give is in his power, to be unjustly treated is not. But there must be someone to treat him unjustly. It is plain, then, that being unjustly treated is not voluntary. Of the questions we intended to discuss, 2 still remain for discussion. 3, whether it is the man who has assigned to another more than his share that acts unjustly, or he who has the excessive share. 4, whether it is possible to treat oneself unjustly. The questions are connected. For if the former alternative is possible and the distributor acts unjustly, and not the man who has the excessive share, then if a man assigns more to another than to himself knowingly and voluntarily, he treats himself unjustly, which is what modest people seem to do, since the virtuous man tends to take less than his share. Or does this statement too need qualification for A, he perhaps gets more than his share of some other good, e.g. of honour or of intrinsic nobility? B, the question is solved by applying the distinction we applied to unjust action, for he suffers nothing contrary to his own wish, so that he is not unjustly treated as far as this goes, but at most only suffers harm. It is plain, too, that the distributor acts unjustly, but not always the man who has the excessive share. For it is not he to whom what is unjust appertains that acts unjustly, but he to whom it appertains to do the unjust act voluntarily, i.e., the person in whom lies the origin of the action. And this lies in the distributor, not in the receiver. Again, since the word do is ambiguous, and there is a sense in which lifeless things, or a hand or a servant who obeys an order, may be said to slay, he who gets an excessive share does not act unjustly, though he does what is unjust. Again, if the distributor gave his judgment in ignorance, he does not act unjustly in respect of legal justice, and his judgment is not unjust in this sense, but in a sense it is unjust. For legal justice and primordial justice are different. But if with knowledge he judged unjustly, he is himself aiming at an excessive share either of gratitude or of revenge. As much, then, as if he were to share in the plunder, the man who has judged unjustly for these reasons has got too much. The fact that what he gets is different from what he distributes makes no difference. For even if he awards land with a view to sharing in the plunder, he gets not land, but money. Men think that acting unjustly is in their power, and therefore that being just is easy. But it is not. To lie with one's neighbour's wife, to wound another, to deliver a bribe is easy and in our power. But to do these things as a result of a certain state of character is neither easy nor in our power. Similarly, to know what is just and what is unjust requires, men think, no great wisdom, because it is not hard to understand the matters dealt with by the laws, though these are not the things that are just, except incidentally. But how actions must be done and distributions effected in order to be just, to know this, is a greater achievement than knowing what is good for the health, though even there, while it is easy to know that honey, wine, hellebore, cautery, and the use of a knife are so, to know how, to whom, and when these should be applied with a view to producing health is no less an achievement than that of being a physician. Again, for this very reason, men think that acting unjustly is characteristic of the just man no less than of the unjust, because he would be not less but even more capable of doing each of these unjust acts, for he could lie with a woman or wound a neighbour, and the brave man could throw away his shield and turn to flight in this direction or in that. But to play the coward or to act unjustly consists not in doing these things except incidentally, but in doing them as the result of a certain state of character, just as to practice medicine and healing consists not in applying or not applying the knife, in using or not using medicines, but in doing so in a certain way. Just acts occur between people who participate in things good in themselves and can have too much or too little of them. For some beings, e.g. presumably the gods, cannot have too much of them, and to others, those who are incurably bad, not even the smallest share in them is beneficial, but all such goods are harmful, while to others they are beneficial up to a point. Therefore, justice is essentially something human. 10. Our next subject is equity and the equitable, to epikes, and their respective relations to justice and the just. For on examination they appear to be neither absolutely the same nor generically different. And while we sometimes praise what is equitable and the equitable man, so that we apply the name by way of praise even to instances of the other virtues, instead of good, meaning by epikestebon, that a thing is better, at other times, when we reason it out, it seems strange if the equitable, being something different from the just, is yet praiseworthy. For either the just or the equitable is not good, if they are different, or if both are good, they are the same. These, then, are pretty much the considerations that give rise to the problem about the equitable. They are all, in a sense, correct and not opposed to one another, for the equitable, though it is better than one kind of justice, yet is just. And it is not as being a different class of thing that it is better than the just. The same thing, then, is just and equitable. And while both are good, the equitable is superior. What creates the problem is that the equitable is just, but not the legally just, but a correction of legal justice. The reason is that all law is universal, but about some things it is not possible to make a universal statement which shall be correct. In those cases, then, in which it is necessary to speak universally, but not possible to do so correctly, the law takes the usual case, though it is not ignorant of the possibility of error. And it is nonetheless correct, for the error is in the law, nor in the legislator, but in the nature of the thing, since the matter of practical affairs is of this kind from the start. When the law speaks universally, then, and a case arises on it which is not covered by the universal statement, then it is right, where the legislator fails us and has erred by oversimplicity to correct the omission, to say what the legislator himself would have said had he been present, and would have put into his law if he had known, hence the equitable is just, and better than one kind of justice, not better than absolute justice, but better than the error that arises from the absoluteness of the statement. And this is the nature of the equitable, a correction of law where it is defective owing to its universality. In fact, this is the reason why all things are not determined by law, that about some things it is impossible to lay down a law, so that a decree is needed. For when the thing is indefinite, the rule also is indefinite. Like the leaden rule used in making the lesbian moulding. The rule adapts itself to the shape of the stone, and is not rigid. And so too the decree